The Blast from Our Past Network.
Hey guys, co-host Corey here. I just wanted to tee this episode up for you real quick. So this is our review of Kenny and Company, Don Coscarelli's second film, and it's the second episode of our series, The Coscarelli Factor. So that series, The Coscarelli Factor and The Carpenter Factor, can both be found on our Patreon page under the Auteur de Force tier. Now, what we do with every auteur we cover under the Auteur de Force series, be it John Carpenter or Don Coscarelli, we go through their entire filmography in order. We don't break them down like we do on the normal show, but we review them and we look at them how they fit into the auteur's, you know, overall catalog of films. That means we went through every single episode of John Carpenter's filmography from Dark Star all the way to that episode of Suburban Screams that he did. And then we moved on to Don Coscarelli. We went all the way up through John Dies at the End and a few of the music videos that he directed, one for Bill Thornberry and one for Dio. So when you sign up to the Auteur de Force tier, you will unlock every single episode of The Carpenter Factor, which is about, I think, like 29 episodes, something like that. It took us about 2 years and a few months to go through them all. And you get every episode of Coscarelli Factor because Zach and I just finished that. And guess what? You will also get access to our next auteur, The Lustig Factor. That's right, we are covering Bill Lustig next, starting with Maniac, and then moving on to Maniac Cop, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So if you want to support the show, swing on over to Patreon, patreon.com/podcastingafterdark. That's patreon.com/podcastingafterdark. You can sign up to the Auteur de Force tier, you can sign up to the base level tier, or you can become a producer of the show at the highest tier. Every single tier will unlock ad-free versions of the main show, and early access and bonus, you know, stuff, some videos and things like that. So swing on by patreon.com/podcastingafterdark and sign up today.
Welcome to the monthly Patreon exclusive series, The Coscarelli Factor, where co-hosts Corey Stevenson and Zach Schaefer discuss the entire filmography of Don Coscarelli. Close your doors and lock your windows and enjoy tonight's episode, Kenny and Company.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Podcasting After Dark presents The Coscarelli Factor, a.k.a. The Coscarelli Factory. I don't know if we've said that on one of these episodes yet, but I'll elaborate in a little bit on that one. Zach the Total Snacket Schaefer, Corey Sleazy C, that's me. I fucked up this intro like crazy, but all because I wanted to say The Coscarelli Factory.
Oh man, I don't know. I just want to. Can we call each other Doug and Kenny for the rest of this episode?
Sure. Can I be Big Doug?
Because we are
Doug,
literally
though?
Doug and Kenny. No, you can't be Big Doug. You got to be Little Doug, and I'm gonna be Kenny, and we're gonna be going off, hanging out in school together and getting in all sorts of nonsense.
Well, how about you be Big Doug and I'll be Little Roy?
Sure.
You're like, this joke is off the rails.
I tried.
Oh, that's right, guys. We are discussing Don Coscarelli's second movie. It's called Kenny and Company. It came out in 1976, and I had never seen it before today, but apparently it was big in Japan. Zach, what's your familiarity with Kenny and Company?
Kenny and Company has been in my life since I can remember. It came out in August of 76. I was born in June of 76, and boy, oh boy, I hadn't watched this movie in maybe 10 years. But watching it the other day, I was immediately transported back to watching this probably once a year in my teenage year, in my adolescent years, and then in my teenage years. And then it popped up on DVD sometime year later, some many years later, got the Anchor Bay DVD, which is now out of print,
yeah,
sadly. and travesty, actually, that Coscarelli's early work is out of print and unavailable, probably due to the fact that this is a 20th Century Fox film, and the Jim the World's Greatest, I think, was Universal. Yeah, man, I watched this movie all the time. It was on regular television back in the day, and then I think I got the VHS tape, and then I got the DVD, and the rest is history. I know this is a Patreon exclusive, so I can be a little more explicit with my reveal on this, but Netflix used to be a physical DVD service, for those that don't know, and they have movies that are, I think they discontinued that service not that long ago.
Yeah.
But they had a lot of physical media discs of movies that weren't available streaming. So you could go on and their website, click the item you want, whether you want the physical or the digital version or whatever, whatever's available. And Kenny and Company was available as a physical. And I remember renting it through Netflix. And then mysteriously, it never got returned to them. And they sent me a message saying, you know, we didn't receive Kenny and Company. Let us know if you sent it back to us or not. And I said, I sent it back to you guys. I put it in the envelope. And that was it. They never questioned it again because things get lost in the mail all the time. I just happen to have a copy of Kenny and Company on DVD. But I don't have a case for it. I need to get a case for it. Those two things don't connect. I'm not saying those two things connect. But, you know, I'm not saying they do or don't.
Can I say that is maybe how I acquired my DVD copy of Frailty with Bill Paxton, which is a fantastic movie if you've never seen
Amen.
It. But yeah, you discover that if you have a, you know, you can pull it off about once a year with Netflix. You could pull something like that off, especially if you borrowed, rented from them enough, build up enough goodwill. Once in a blue moon, what's it gonna hurt?
What does Netflix care? They don't care.
Exactly.
It's, you know.
So you got a copy of Kenny and Company, and I got a copy of Frailty, and we both don't have cases for our DVDs.
We got to get cases for those, and you know, keep them in all their glory versus some little envelope.
Going back to our Anchor Bay watch list that we did with Lee, you know, we mentioned that Anchor Bay is coming back as a new Blu-ray imprint this year. Wouldn't it be wonderful if they put out Kenny and Company, because they must have had the rights before to it? Maybe they somehow still have them and we can get a copy of this movie, because this movie is spectacular. As someone who's, you know, seen it for the very first time, I was kind of awestruck by it. You know, I Jim the World's Greatest was fine. I enjoyed it, of course. The picture quality on YouTube wasn't that great, so that probably, you know, hindered it a little bit. The copy that Zach and I have, well, copy, the link, is a beautiful picture quality. I'll post that when I post the this episode. I'll post a link to that as well so you guys can all watch that. It's a great copy on YouTube. Of course, I still want a physical copy of it, but I think that also helped. And I just was like, you know, I'm expecting to enjoy this movie, but I wasn't expecting to enjoy it as much as I did.
Yeah, it is, you know, where Jim the World's Greatest is absolutely unequivocally a drama, a coming of age drama. Kenny and Company is a coming of age drama, comedy, you know, slice of life picture. And it really, truly captures, I think, the spirit of what it meant to be a kid in the 70s and 80s. I mean, I saw shades of what my brother was like as a kid, and then I saw shades of what I was like as a kid in the early 80s growing up. This movie, to me, is everything you would want in a young kid movie. Some of the subject matter maybe doesn't fly as well today. Well, actually, no, check that. I think if I was Bodhi's age, 9 or 10 years old, sat down and watched this by myself, I'd be like, yeah, that's what my friends talk about at school. Yeah, that's what we do at school. If my parents walked in the room, I might be like, oh, I don't talk like that, or I don't do those things. I think this movie is a very honest picture of what it's like to be a kid.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it resonates with people.
Yeah, I think that really kind of sums it up, how honest this movie is. And I was talking about it with Myra. She didn't watch it with me, but, you know, I was telling her, I was like, first off, they're real kids. And the movie deals with subject matters of like bullies and your pet dying and stuff like, and you know, sort of the questions that those sort of questions that arise from those conversations, like about the pet dying and stuff like that. But, you know, as you get older, Zach, you know, we don't deal with bullies as much as an adult. We love our pets, but we also understand that everything passes and all this kind of stuff. But kids don't, and to kids, these things are very strong emotional events for them. And I think the movie also did a great job of, even though it was created by an adult and we're adults watching it, it doesn't downplay the bully. It doesn't downplay the kid dealing, you know, Kenny dealing with his dog dying and stuff like that. I think it gives it the emotional importance that those kids would put on it at that age. And I, like, right now, I mean, this is obviously we're mixing in Coscarelli discussion, but with two movies in, it's probably two of the best kid movies I've ever seen. Now, granted, they're vastly different. The first one, Jim the World's Greatest, is a very somber kid film. This one is a very lighthearted kid film. Like, this is everything that, like, aside from the supernatural stuff, this is everything Stranger Things would want to be. But, man, we never see kid movies like this anymore.
No. You know, films attempt to, well, I would say more filmmakers nowadays tend to lean in towards the preteen and teenager ages, you know, when they cover coming of age type movies. Not many films lean into the more adolescent 10-year-old movies, you know, tweeners, I guess. You rarely see a tween film nowadays, and that's what this one is. Like, this, and this deals, like you said, you know, from this kid, from a kid's perspective, this is literally how I think they view the world. I'm sure I did too, you know, besides the dealing with death, dealing with bullies, they deal with love and love lost, you know, friendships and awkward friendships. And like, it makes you want to live in the world that Kenny's living in.
Yeah.
You know, he's surrounded. And one of the things I love about this movie that I don't think would necessarily be the case with movies nowadays, because I feel like everything wants to be an A24 movie and have sort of some sort of heaviness to it in order to, you know, pull the audience in. Every adult, for the most part, with the exception of a few, which we'll talk about, is like a lovable, kind adult.
Yeah.
You know, and they're mentors. The parents are like caring parents. None of the parents of the main characters are like mean. And whereas nowadays they would make one of them mean, you know, or abusive in some way.
And you know, like it's not a perfect comparison, and it shouldn't be, and it doesn't need to be, but like a movie like 8-Bit Christmas. We both love it. It's a kid's movie.
Yeah.
But there's something so very different between that movie and this movie here. And just like how it feels. Like, and I wonder if it's also because it was shot in 76. I was born in 78. So it feels closer to me. But like, I watch Kenny and Company and I'm like, it's not my childhood, but it's a childhood, and I get it. Whereas I watch 8-Bit Christmas, I'm like, it's a Hollywood production trying to mimic a child. It's almost like, you know, when the Predator laughs, it's still, you know, the person's laugh, but there's something not authentic about it. Whereas, like you said, honest, like Kenny and Company felt like an honest, authentic, like a kid filmed it. It feels like a kid filmed it and a kid wrote it.
Yeah, this is more of a documentary vibe. What is that, like cinema verite, right? Mm-hmm. Where, whereas all these other, the movie, you just, you know, 8-Bit or Christmas Story or, you know, other child-centric films of like the 80s and 90s and early 2000s are more just movies,
right?
This felt more like, you're watching a documentary. And I think that's what I love about it. I love how, you know, the kids are just being real. Like the stuff they do, I remember breaking windows when I was a kid. I remember doing stuff nowadays that, you know, if I ever bring it up to Bodie, it's like, well, you know, I learned my lesson, or I did this thing and learned my lesson, dot, dot, dot. But back in the day, I didn't think of the repercussions.
No,
of,
you're not going, you know, to. You're a kid. Yeah.
And throwing a, yeah.
You're going to ride your soapbox racer thing down a giant, you know, hill, and the brakes aren't going to work. And you're going to be like, how the fuck did I survive that? I mean, you and I both know that there's a million and one times that we should have fucking died when we were kids back in the 80s. But, you know, we didn't. We survived, you know, scars and all, but we made it. And this movie, I felt like it really captured that. Now, we're going to obviously talk a bit more about a lot of things. I have a lot of notes, actually, because I really fucking enjoyed this.
Me too.
But I want to kind of use what you said to kind of go into the cast and crew, because you said that this has a documentary film feel to it. And I agree with you there. And I wonder if it's also because, and this will also kind of go into the Coscarelli discussion later, but Don Coscarelli wrote, directed, did the camera work. He's a cinematographer. And he edited this film. About the only thing he didn't do is act in it, produce it, and do the music. So it's like I feel like it feels documentary, because I guarantee you there weren't like a bunch of people behind the camera standing around. Like, I get the feeling that this was a very small film crew.
Yeah, it was. And you're going to see or hear a lot of names that come up that are connected to other Coscarelli movies. Like, he's very like in-house family oriented. You know, Coscarelli's in his early 20s when he made this movie, right? Because he was a teenager when he made Jim the World's Greatest. I think he was like 21 or 22 when he did this movie.
Well, this movie, yeah, because Jim the World's Greatest, I think he was like 18 or 19 or something.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
He's got to be young because his mom's in the movie and she doesn't look that old, to be honest with you. So,
no.
Before you go into the cast and crew, though, the last crew member, the score, the musical score, we need to mention, because this will play into the Coscarelli factor later, but it's the same guy who did Jim the World's Greatest, Fred Myro, who also did Soylent Green. And it's interesting. I want to ask you what your opinion was on the music, because I felt like the movie could have been a lot more lighthearted, but the music is what added some sort of grounded somberness to it. But I don't know if it fits as well here as it did in Jim the World's Greatest. Like, I was almost expecting things to be a little bit more upbeat in this one. I'm not criticizing the score at all, but sometimes I was like, it's given us a little bit of somber music, but yet I'm like, yeah, I don't know if this is really that much of a somber scene. But maybe that kind of coincides with the heightened emotions that you feel at that age as your body is going through things, your chemicals are going crazy and everything. And maybe that music is supposed to represent what Kenny feels in a certain scene. Even though things are fun and bright around him, he feels a little bit love lost, you know, type of thing. And the music might be somber. Maybe the music's supposed to be more of insight into Kenny. And maybe I need to kind of revisit on multiple viewings, but sometimes I was like, I don't know if the music quite matched what I thought the scene was supposed to be. Not always, just sometimes.
Well, I think I wrote down in my notes that this movie reminds me, it's like a live action version of Charlie Brown or Peanuts in a way, you know, with Kenny being Charlie and kind of going throughout his day and the various characters that come up in his life. And the music in Charlie Brown, of course, and Peanuts is by Vince Guaraldi. And it kind of has like a jazzy whimsicalness about it. Like, at times it can get dark, I guess, but oftentimes it's just kind of like on its own little plateau. That's what this feels like to me, in a sense. I don't always think the music fits the scenes, and I feel like it's almost like experimental, like jazz, really, and like Vince Guaraldi. You know, Fred Myro obviously went on to do the Phantasm music as well. We talked more about him in the Jim the World's Greatest episode. Yeah, I'd say the music doesn't always fit. It's a little out of place, but it's a little After School Special-esque, just like Jim the World's Greatest was. But, this movie only has a score. It doesn't like really feature any songs per se, like Jim the World's Greatest did, and maybe could have benefited from that. But I didn't mind it. You know, it didn't take away from my love of this movie. I thought the scenes, the Halloween scenes towards the end of the movie, the music's really creepy, and it gives you a preview as to what Phantasm's music is going to be like. And Coscarelli's directing style when it comes to Phantasm 2. Phantasm 1.
Yeah, Phantasm 2, T-O-O also,
Yes, exactly. But yeah, no, I'd say the music is a little bit of a letdown, but...
But it doesn't take away anything from it.
No, no, because this movie's powered by its phenomenal cast of kids and actors, adult actors.
My God, dude! Like seriously, how can fucking Kenny only have one credit to his name? He is fantastic in this.
Yeah, you know, I hope that the guy's still alive, Dan McCann, who plays Kenny. I hope nothing, you know, nefarious happened to the dude, because it's like one of those things where it's almost like the end of Raising Arizona. You're like, oh, when little Nathan Arizona or whatever his name is grows up to be an adult, and you're like, oh, that kid's cool. Whatever happened to that kid? And I think that kid, he died or something. Something sad kind of happened, I think, with the kid in Raising Arizona, the adult.
Okay.
I think so. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that happened. Anyways. Yeah, Dan McCann's great as Kenny. A. Michael Baldwin this is his first appearance.
Yeah, before we get into A. Michael Baldwin, who I absolutely loved as well, I wanted to say that Dan McCann was giving me Holter Grand vibes from Maximum Overdrive. Remember the young kid in that? That's who I was kind of getting a little bit vibes from for him. But A. Michael Baldwin, dude, this is his first role, and he's obviously going to go on to be in Phantasm after this. Wow, like he has such a presence on screen. Like, again, I love Dan McCann also, but I can see A. Michael Baldwin taking off after this movie.
Yeah, he plays Doug, and he's great. Like, he's just... I mean, he's being himself, you know, and we've all had that. Yeah, he's a skateboarder, a little smart ass kid, but he's like a faithful friend, you know, and it kind of like, that's what I've always envisioned. That's what friends should be. They can be sarcastic and assholes, but they're not to their own friends.
Yeah.
You know? To their own friends, they're like, they're tight and they're committed and they're, you know, solid with them. He's so cool as Doug, and he brings we'll get into some of the antics in a minute, but it's just, he's kind of the one who gets everything going, all the crazy stuff that happens in the movie. He's the reason for it.
And I like the fact that it's not like he doesn't get things going too crazy. Like, they don't do anything like illegal. I know.
One thing.
Yeah, true. Yeah. By the end, it's a little intense, but it's also childhood shenanigans. You know what I mean? Like, it still walks that line, you know?
I mean, yeah, they don't get caught for anything that they do.
Yeah, good. Good. But yeah.
Look, I know people who stuck M80s under garbage cans and actually. A lot of stuff they do, I'm like, yep, I know people who did that.
Yeah, me too.
Or I did it myself. Jeff Roth plays Sherman. No other credits to Jeff Roth's name. Sherman's a great, he's like their sidekick. He's their annoying sidekick. He's their little shit sidekick. We all had a friend like that in school who like bugged the hell out of us, but he was always like around, so you just put up with him. That's Sherman.
Yeah. Can I say that low key, Sherman and Big Doug are my two favorite characters in the movie?
Oh, I can see why. Because Sherman brings out porn to show everybody, and Big Doug is like...
Lets people play with his gun.
Yeah. Yeah, Big Doug, Ralph Richman, who shows up in Phantasm. He was also Jim the World's Greatest. He plays Doug's dad. And yeah, like, you're introduced to him by handcuffing Kenny and putting glasses on Kenny's hands, like wine glasses, and he's going to shoot him off with his gun, freaking Kenny out. It's hilarious stuff, guys. Hilarious. It is, though.
But it is. And like, and you were saying earlier, like, how the parents are kind of nice. Like, now Sherman's dad, you know, you see him, he's kind of a dick at one point, but you know, he's a dick because they hurt his son, you know what I mean? So
well, they you have to put context to that.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a dick to them because why?
Yeah, exactly. It's because they got his son to snap his finger in a fucking mousetrap, which can break.
They put a mousetrap in a bag.
Which can break your bone, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So I get that. But, like, I do love the fact that Kenny's dad and Big Doug, like, they seem like just, you know, at least Kenny's dad seems like a good guy just trying to figure things out also, you know, like doesn't have all the answers type of thing. And then Big Doug just seems like a fun goofball kind of dude. And, you know, and I like the fact that when he's buying toys later for Sherman, like they come up on him and he fucking pulls out the two fake pistols and hits them both in the head with the suction cups and he laughs. He's like, that's the kind of dad that I would want to be, you know, basically.
Yeah, he's like what a fun uncle would be if it was a dad.
Yeah, basically.
Because he's so cool. He's so much fun, yeah. Speaking of fun, Reggie Bannister makes his second appearance in a movie, and he is amazing as their teacher, Mr. Donovan.
Yeah, he's really good in this.
So good.
He didn't have much in Jim the World's Greatest. His scene was a little silly, a little weird, but you're like, okay, that's fine. Here he has a lot more to do, and his personality really like sort of shines through. And he also, not going to lie, man, if it wasn't for the hair, he's a good-looking dude, but that male pattern baldness, like, it just, it turned him into, like, the icon that he is. Like, I don't think he would have been the icon that he is without everything that he has going on, but man, if he had a better set of hair, I think he could have gone a little bit further, because his face, he's a good-looking guy.
I mean, he gives Patrick Stewart a run for his money,
right?
You know, because like he's like literally, he's the guy that, I mean, my mom was single at this time, I think, and he's the guy that I wish my mom would end up marrying.
Yeah,
she didn't ever did, you know, until she met my stepdad, Mike. But she's like, that's the guy you hope your mom, your single mom, divorced mom brings home. And you're like, that's the cool guy.
Yeah.
That's the guy that's like going to play football in the backyard, or he's going to, you know, have a heart to heart discussion with you about something. And he's going to listen to you. He's going to understand you. He's not going to talk down to you. It's cool.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I don't know. Sometimes you can think about movies nowadays. Is what character is going to be sort of sinister here, whatnot? Nobody. Like, he's just a good teacher, and there's nothing, like, he plays with the kids, you know, but it's nothing inappropriate. It's like you keep thinking that there's going to be something else to it because you're jaded by the time, you know, we're the age that we are. But I think what makes this movie so wonderful is that the movie itself is not jaded.
Yeah, I mean, even movies nowadays that, or TV shows that would not have a character be like that, they would still make, someone would make a reference like, oh, he's probably doing that because he's a pervert, you know, like they would have to throw something in there, which they don't need to. And I like that you brought up Stranger Things, because I feel like the creators probably saw this movie to some respect.
I would imagine so.
Yeah. That Mr. Soupy, played by Kenneth V. Jones, he's their football coach.
Yeah, yeah.
He's in Phantasm as well. He infamously takes the first sphere to the head in the first Phantasm movie. He passed away actually not that long ago. He died in 2020. But he's hilarious as their football coach. He's such an asshole. That's like a pretty accurate character though, because I'm like, coaches were jerks back then. They were total jerks back then.
Yeah.
This movie opens with a football game. You know, Kenny is the star football player, and you get the sense that he would be the star quarterback in middle school, high school. Like, he's gonna be the, you know, the prom king. He'll be the cool guy, or he'll just be the cool guy that like everyone expects to be the main dude, but he just kind of rolls back because he's just too cool. He doesn't have to be in the spotlight, even though he is, because he's such a good, he's such a cool kid.
Yeah, nah, dude. Do you have anybody else to discuss, or do you want to?
Not really. I mean, there's a myriad of like side actors that, you know, have no IMDb credits to their name, and but everybody does a phenomenal job in this movie. I'm trying to think. Oh yeah, sorry. Marcy, who plays the little girl in this, who Kenny has a crush on, who you know, breaks his heart at one point, which I appreciate, played by Terry Kalbas. She's also in Phantasm. She's the psychic lady's daughter in Phantasm.
Okay, cool.
So that infamous scene where Mike, you know, goes to basically get his fortune told. She's the friend of the family.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So you'll see a lot of these actors that maybe have small roles in this will have small roles in Phantasm, you know. And Don Coscarelli, like, I can imagine he's working with people he knows in his community.
Yeah, and I'm curious as to why Angus Scrimm, you know, was in Jim the World's Greatest, but not this one.
Maybe he wasn't available at the time. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe. So, kind of going into the main discussion, because the reason I wanted to at this point, because you were talking about the football game, and, you know, this movie opens up with him. It's like a little scrimmage football game. You know, it's nothing major. They're playing, like, you know, flag football, which is awesome.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. And I love the fact that, you know, this movie has narration by Kenny. I'm a big fan of that, but it only has it probably in the first third of the movie. The narration kind of fades away. Kind of wish it would have kept going as strongly through it. But I appreciate, first of all, I love movies with narration. I always do. But I appreciate the fact that, like, he ran the wrong way, you know, and he's like, look, I know what I'm doing. I'm not an idiot, but sometimes you just run the wrong way because you get all excited, you know. I like that. And because when I've done it too, like, because I didn't watch a lot of football as a kid, but sometimes, you know, I'd play with my friends and then I'd fuck up and run the wrong way because you get sort of turned around and everything. So I could kind of relate to that. But I love the narration and everything. And then I loved the scene afterwards where the coach, because they still won, the coach took them out to get drinks, you know, just sodas, basically. And I love the fact that you see 20 kids pile out of a station wagon. So, you know, none of them had, like, seatbelts on. And I was like, ah, 1976. And then, you know, it goes right into Kenny, like, because he got the touchdown. Coach is like, get whatever you want. So the Kenny gets the suicide. And he explains what a suicide is. It's like everything, you know, all the drinks at once. And he's like, that kind of tastes like mud, you know, but like, because, you know, but Doug's like, hey, how's your suicide? And he's like, yeah, it's cool. It's fine. But I like that insight into the character. Just, you know, he made the mistake of running the wrong way, but they still won. And, you know, he thought he was cool by getting his suicide drink, but it really didn't kind of wasn't as good as he thought it was going to be. And so, like, right in like the first 5 minutes, I'm going to keep saying it, I was like, this movie's so fucking honest about being a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you ever done a suicide, by the way?
Of course. I never loved it.
We all have.
You start, like, figuring out, okay, you can't do everything, but you can start mixing things that go together. But the suicide, literally with everything, it's fucking gross.
Yeah. It's every flavor from the slushy or whatever you're getting.
Yeah.
You go to 7-Eleven and you get the Coke, you get the cherry Coke, you get the cherry, grape, whatever. And yeah, it tastes disgusting because they're not supposed to mix some of those. Some of them you are.
Yeah.
Actually, I think I mixed cherry and Coke together to make cherry Coke before cherry Coke. Yeah, no, I love it. I thought it was amazing. The narration definitely reminded me of Charlie Brown, where and that narration, I think, comes up a little bit in Phantasm as well, to some respect. So, you know, maybe that's something that Coscarelli is a fan of moving forward. We might see that in other movies. I don't know. It's there's so many moments like, you know, and then Jim the World's Greatest, there was a Jack in the Box that they went to. And this one, it's Winchell's Donuts. It's very much like Southern California.
Yep.
There was a Winchell's Donuts in the Bay Area as well. But I think that's a California chain or based chain. It's just cool to see product placement like that.
And this is all filmed in Long Beach area, which I think that's where Coscarelli grew up.
Right, right. And, you know, yeah, this is where I heard schnozola for the first time. I use that word all the time. I used to use it all the time. I'm like, that's where I got it from. I know that's where I got it from. You know, David Irons, by the way, is a huge fan of Kenny and Company. And I think that was one of the first movies that we ever talked about where, like, I think he chimed in and started making a connection with us about that. He's like, you guys talked about Kenny and Company. These guys know what's up because they mentioned that movie.
Well, I got to say, when I went over to Japan, David asked me to be on the lookout for it. And I actually did go into it's a pretty big store. It's kind of not a chain, but, you know, has a couple locations. It's called Mandarake. It's got used books, used manga, used toys, and also used movies. Also used hentai. I found the hentai section.
Of course you did.
But I actually went up to them and I actually pulled up a picture of Kenny and Company, showed it to them and asked them if, you know, if they had it. And they didn't, unfortunately. So, but apparently that's the only place you can get the Blu-ray, I think, is in Japan. So I did look for it, David. I did look for it. I did ask for it, but they didn't have it. So
yeah, Corey went into a hentai porn shop and showed a picture of two young boys. And he said, Do you have this
right here? The guy's slowly calling the police.
I wanted to shout out the clothes in this. The clothes are amazing, you know, like badass clothes. I didn't have clothes like that when I was a kid. I had hand-me-downs from my brother who was 5 years older than me. So I was getting bell bottoms when they weren't in fashion anymore.
An only child, I got my own clothes.
Of course you did, you little shit. You know, you're like Sherman with his giant elephant for his birthday.
Dude, I got my TNC surf design shirts. I got my body gloves. I got the shit that if you touched, it would turn different color.
Hypercolor.
Yeah. Hypercolor.
I just got Bodhi. I got Bodhi a Hypercolor shirt and for 80s day, right? And the kids are like, what's that? Kids are assholes, guys. Kids in general, kids are assholes. And they're like, that's not 80s. I go, Bodhi, first of all, your friends are wrong. Second of all, they have no idea that they're what they're talking about. And third, their parents are wrong too for not educating them correctly. Hypercolor is a thing. It's still, he loves his shirt, by the way. Yeah, Hypercolor was rad. It still is rad. But there's so many little things in this. Like, you know, there's snapshots of all the things that you either knew someone did in the 80s or you did yourself. Chewing paper, for example, yeah. Like spit wads, throwing mud balls at people, hitting them in the face. You know, I witnessed these things firsthand. Like, and then people laugh at it.
Yeah.
Those are just like the beginnings of this film. They're little vignettes. It's like, this is a, you know how Fast Times at Ridgemont High is like a series of vignettes of a day in the life. This is like that for little kids.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. And this is like, I think like maybe a week or something. And I love the fact that it's like the week before Halloween. So this is a Halloween movie. And yeah, right. It's little vignettes. Like, you know, the character Little Roy, they're like, hey, let's go check out Little Roy. So they go over there and it turns out it's just like a college age dude who is totally jacked, who works out in his garage, and they just sit there and watch him, and they're like, how much you bench press? And he's like, oh no, 350 right now or something, you know, like whatever. And he just doesn't like care because he just has these two little 10-year-old boys watching him work out. And it's weird because it's not bad. It's just how things were back then, you know?
Because that's what you did. You were like, this guy's so cool, I want to watch him work out, because eventually you want to work out. That's what propels certain kids to want to do the things they do in life. You see someone that you look up to. You see He-Man on TV and you're like, I want to look like that guy. So you start doing steroids and your penis shrinks. No, I'm kidding. You know, like you emulate, you admire the things that that you think are cool. And it's innocent. There's nothing nefarious about it at all. You know, the bully is an asshole bully, and he is like, we've all had bullies like that. They mention, you know, going into the the alleyway or something after school to fight. Like, you did that back in the day. It's so different now. I know things are changed, unfortunately, but that's what happened back in the day. You got pushed into fights.
Yeah.
Kenny basically gets pushed into a fight that he doesn't want to do. And the way it's handled at the end is amazing. I kind of don't want to tell everybody exactly what happens at the end, because it's kind of a surprise and shock for those people. I guarantee you a lot of our listeners haven't seen this movie, and you're in for a treat, no pun intended.
Yeah, because it's you know, just know that, like, sort of the main three story arcs are, you know, him being in love with this girl, build up to Halloween night, which is awesome, and then, you know, how they overcome the bully. We don't need to tell you how they overcame the bully. Just know that it was fun and kind of, you know, a little bit elaborate, but fine, whatever. And yeah, go and watch and enjoy it. But I like how there's, you know, it is a vignette movie, but there are these underlying things that are happening throughout the entire film that, you know, they do have payoffs, you know, even if they're not as, if one's not as sort of as big as another, but they all have like some kind of a payoff. And at the end of the day, and I love how it sort of ends, there's no spoilers here, but, you know, just watching, you know, Kenny, Doug, and Sherman, you know, walking down the train tracks, it's just another day to them. Like, their lives are still going to go on, even though, like, you know, he'll still have more loves in the future. There will be more bullies in the future. You know, it just, it's life goes on. It doesn't have a big crescendo to it, although it, you know, it kind of does have a climax. But it's not like that kind of movie. Like you said, it's a vignette movie. It's a slice of life movie. This is what happened this week, and these kids are going to go off into their future, and it looks bright, and it looks fun, and it looks magical, and that's what Don Coscarelli, the sense that he instills in you when you watch this film.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even the moments that are sad, he handles so well. Like, Kenny's got his dog named Bob, who's just a cute little dog, and, you know, the dad comes home early from work one day, and, whoa, the shooting star.
Oh, cool. Make a wish. Okay, it's a long wish. You don't have to hold your breath the whole time.
Got it. Okay. I had to get it all out, full sentence. Kenny's dad comes home early from work one day, and he's like, why are you home early from work, Dad? And he's like, we got to take Bob to the vet. And you're like, immediately, you know.
Yeah, you know.
Oh, and it's so gut-wrenching because we've all been there. Yep. You know, I was telling Kristen about this movie today. I said, I remember having to put my pets down, you know, as a kid and as an adult. And it's sad. It sucks. It's terrible. And you don't want it to be the case. And as a kid, you're like, you don't get it, you know, and there are times when you do get it. Well, you get it after the first one, you know, and then, or the second one. But this is his childhood pet, and it's so sweet to see his connection with the dog. And it's like super genuine. It feels real. And then he's sad about it, and how it's handled post that is so cool, because he's got, you know, Doug is like talking to his dad about Kenny's dog being put down, and they want to cheer him up, and it's done in such a lighthearted, loving way, and you're like, man, that's what this movie might make you sad and wish you had, you know, people in your life that care about you the way these characters care about each other.
Well, I think that's what made me love Big Doug, you know, was the scene where they're at the football meeting thing with the coach and everything,
which
and,
is hilarious,
yeah,
by the way.
It's great, and especially when he lets that kid play with the gun, and the first thing the kid does is shoot the coach in the face. I mean, the gun's not loaded, and I like the fact that when he handed it to the kid, he took the clip out, he checked the chamber, you know what I mean? Like, he was a professional about it, although still shouldn't give, like, a 9 or 10-year-old kid a gun.
9mm?
Yeah, but I love the fact that he knew that Kenny was upset, and you know as well as I do, when you, your best friend, their parents also care about you as well. And right. Like, you know, growing up, you know, I know that, I know for a fact that Luke's parents love me like a son, you know, and when I go home, and even I had them meet Myra for the first time. Like, Luke wasn't there. I went over there with just me and Myra and hung out with his parents for like a couple hours and everything. But so when I saw that scene, and Big Doug kind of makes Kenny laugh by putting the coach in handcuffs, and it's a whole thing and everything, but it's funny and cute. I related to this movie so hard, even though I, you know, grew up on the East Coast, not on the West Coast. All these beats, man, everything, like, you know, your best friend's parents caring about you as well. That was, you know, that made me feel something. Like, I knew that was the case as well. Just, and then your little shrimpy friend that you don't hate him. You still love him, even though he annoys you, and you'll still stick up for him because he's your asshole friend. But you might still hurt him occasionally because he annoys you. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
right.
It's not perfect. But again, this movie does such an honest job of portraying kids, but also I think of portraying the adults around them as well. Now, I never had a bully like this guy in my life. I never grew up with that kind of bullies. It didn't hurt that I was also kind of the big kid, even though I was the sort of the sweet one. I was big, so I never really kind of got picked on. So I can't relate to the bully stuff, but I've seen enough movies and everything to I can say I can understand it. But the stuff I really latched onto was the stuff like the dad, like Doug's dad to Kenny and stuff like that. That's the shit that I latched onto. And then the shit of like, yeah, like the fact that Doug also cares about Kenny. Like, they might not like say that they love each other and hug, but you can tell they care about each other. They can tell they love each other.
Yeah, Doug would be the kind of guy that like put his arm around you and he's like, "I got you, buddy," or whatever, that kind of thing, that kind of vibe to it. Yeah, there's so many beats throughout this film where you're like, "Oh my god, yeah, I've been there." Like, there's a foreign exchange student at their school, and they teach him to swear. They actually get him to say swear words, which is hilarious. And how their teacher handles it is really freaking funny too.
Yeah.
His response when the little kid reveals what he knows of the English language, it's so funny, and that launches right into like a whole like sex ed thing for kids. What kids thought sex is back in the day. And it's so funny, man.
Yeah, I have that note too. Like just Sherman's explanation of how, you know, women get pregnant was like hilarious. And it just like, it was just a conversation that felt natural, and they were doing something else. Like Kenny and Doug were working on like a new spaceship or something, but it's not a part of the movie. Like, you don't see it created. It was just another project that they were working on. They'll probably never finish it, but that's right. How you were as a kid. And so this little scene of them, it's just like, again, it's a vignette. It's a little standalone scene that's great. And another scene that was like not necessary, but awesome, and I love that it was in the movie. They're killing time before Halloween night because, yeah, you got full of energy. You're ready to rock and roll. Well, what the fuck do we do? We got like 5 hours till the sun goes down. Well, let's make some prank phone calls. And their prank phone call was fucking hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, prank phone calls, putting M80s in garbage cans. I'd say the biggest thing that happens in this movie where you're like, I don't know if I did that, but if I knew anyone that did, they probably got their ass handed to them by their parents. It's putting a mannequin in the street,
yeah,
you know, to scare the shit out of people thinking, almost running over it. And what happens with said mannequin kind of segues into Halloween night,
yeah,
which ends up being terrifying for the three kids, like is legit terrifying at one point, especially for Sherman, who's dressed up like a penguin, which is really funny. And that's the thing too, like they don't goof on each other's costumes. They're like, oh, this is cool.
Yeah.
You know, this is, I'm a tracker. Oh, I'm a bear. I'm a penguin. You know, like, okay, sure. That's what it is. Nowadays, it's like, well, who do you look like? Oh, that's not real or whatever. It's like, who cares, man? We're just having a good time.
Yeah.
And I love it all.
Yeah. And I Halloween night is great. It's kind of the climax of the movie, even though them versus the bully as technically the climax. I kind of like the Halloween night one better. And yeah, I like how it's scary, but you know, as an adult, you take a step back, you realize they're not in any kind of danger or anything like that. It's not like anything supernatural. It's just a haunted house thing that's kind of goes a little bit wrong when they shoot the person that's dressed up with their BB gun. And then rightfully so, that person gets pissed off and chases them into the street. Then yeah, they get hit by a car, but it's like, it doesn't kill them or anything. They're just like, God damn it. You know, like stupid kids. Now, Zach, the one part of the movie that I thought was kind of weird was when the guy died in midday by crashing. Like, I was like, okay, how fast would that car really be going on a side road like that, you know, type of thing?
Well, he's probably a drunk.
A drunk, yeah. But that was one thing I couldn't really relate to because I'd never found a dead body before like that.
I never did. I didn't either. That I agree with you. That was definitely a moment of like, whoa, that's intense. Cause it kind of it connected with the whole dying issue. Cause there is a kind of an underlying question of Kenny wondering about death. But there's a reference made to, getting shot with rock salt. And, that definitely happened to me, you know, back in the day. I didn't get shot with rock salt, but my brother's friend did. And that was like a real threat, wanting to sneak into people's houses, creepy houses. That was a thing,
yeah,
for me, at least, yeah, back in the day. Like, I wonder who lived over there. And I wonder, you know, this little old lady that lived across the street from me that everyone thought she was a witch. Like, that's like the lady in this movie. What they do to her poor deceased husband is hilarious and messed up.
Must be an ashtray.
There's just so many moments. It's like, yeah, this movie needs to be seen and seen again over and over again. It should be an annual film for people. It should be like a pre-Halloween Eve film. It should be a fall film to watch for people. It's definitely like a fun, cool 90 minutes of like pure lighthearted snapshots into what it was like to be a kid in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, no, as soon as this comes out on Blu-ray, I'm purchasing it. And yeah, man, this should be something that's viewed annually, you know, like A Christmas Story, and it should be up there with those kids movies, you know, even like up there with season one of Stranger Things, you know, like I feel like that show was still at that point a kid's show and everything. And it was fun to see like, oh, you know, kids are in danger and stuff. But like, you know, it should be up there with E.T. It should be on this pedestal with all of these like kid movies and everything that I just said. I think this movie does better than all of them. I think it does better with kid stuff than E.T. I think it does better with kid stuff than any of these other movies. It's just a goddamn shame that it, you know, doesn't exist on Blu-ray. But let's talk about the Coscarelli factor. At this point, you know, he's a kids movie guy. So, but knowing what's coming, you know, so we can have a full conversation, you know, Jim the World's Greatest is a somber kids movie. Then you got Kenny and Company, which I'd say is a lighthearted kids movie. And then we know Phantasm is next. And dare I say, and I know it's violent, I know it's rated R, but it's a kids horror movie. So he's going to do boom, boom, boom. Like and he's nailing it, man. He's nailing these kid like motifs. And I know he's going to do it in Phantasm, even though we're not discussing it there. But then I wonder if, like, you know, okay, I'm curious how much of this is going to carry over into Beastmaster. Or is he going to kind of get this out of his system and be like, I kind of did the kid thing. I'm ready to sort of move on into some more adult territories. But as it stands, you know, this being the second movie and maybe his kid trilogy, Phantasm is the third and the last of the kid trilogy. Like, I mean, he's crushing it right now.
He is. I mean, Beastmaster is a kid-friendly fantasy film. But
is it kid's movie like this is?
No, it's definitely not. And it's also his first biggest budget. So, you know, these are all interesting factors to take into account. But two movies in, yeah, he's definitely established himself with a particular vision. And his writing style feels very conversational throughout this whole thing. All of it feels very authentic and very almost improvised, the way they talk to each other, the characters. You know, and then there's the connection of the narration, the connection of the music. His style is becoming a little bit more refined. I think that scene, the Halloween scene, the haunted house scene, because the kids go to a haunted house, that scene feels more like, oh, this is a Coscarelli kind of vibe to it, because you see a lot of that in Phantasm. Will we see that in Beastmaster? I don't know. We'll find out.
And I'm curious to see if, like, you know, you can tell he's like starting to have the he had the conversation about death, you know, in Jim the World's Greatest, and then he's still talking about it here. Although I think it's very natural in this movie, the Kenny's, you know, sort of pursuit on his knowledge about death, and sort of where that takes him. And it's never morbid, you know what I mean? And it's never exploitative. And I like how it starts naturally with his dog dying. That's his first experience with death, pretty much. And I like how he even asks the old crazy man of the neighborhood. He has that moment with that guy, and that it's a sweet moment as well. And there's never obviously a definitive answer on death, and Kenny never really has any sort of satisfactory conclusion to these questions that he asks. But that's also because, I mean, Zach, you and I know we're in our late 40s and we don't have answers either. So Kenny's asking questions that no one's going to ever have the answer for. So I don't expect him to get the answer in this movie, but I like the fact that he also doesn't get an answer that is like satisfactory to him. It's just sort of, he just moves on to something else. But that's also like, that's how kids are. You know what I mean? Like, that's a very kid, like, yeah, I'm thinking about it, but now I'm distracted by Halloween's here. Like, I don't have time to think about death with Halloween here. You know, like, I think that's a very honest. This movie is just so fucking honest.
Well, I think he carries that theme into Phantasm as well, because it's dealing with death as well.
That's kind of like, so going into Phantasm, I haven't seen it in a long time. Going into that, my two sort of things that I'm now, my interest is peaked on, is how much of a kid's movie is it? And I know that Michael Baldwin's in it, and I know he's obviously older and everything, but it's still like, it centers on him. So I'm curious to see how much of a kid's horror movie is it? And then I'm curious to see if the questions about death, you know, these are clearly, you know, Don Coscarelli's questions as well, I'm sure. Right. You know, he's the writer. So I'm curious to see if this is also like, if Kenny and Company was the building blocks for that conversation that comes up in Phantasm. I don't know yet, because we haven't watched it yet for the show, and I haven't seen it, Phantasm, in years.
You know, it'll be an interesting conversation for sure, and I'm looking forward to having it, because obviously, Phantasm this year celebrates its 45th anniversary, which is exciting. I believe it's 45th, because it came out in 1979, right?
Yes, same as I believe the Warriors. So, yeah.
Yeah. So he's moving, and also he's moving like 2-3 years at a time in between movies, which back in the day that makes sense. Everything moves so much faster now. Yeah, I'd say the overall factor is like he's got kids in it, the dialogue, you know, cinematography, nothing really stands out to me just yet overall. But it is the vibe. Like, Coscarelli creates a vibe with his movies. They're very unique. And each, while Jim the World's Greatest wasn't the greatest, and Coscarelli would be the first to say that, I still told him to his face how much I thought it was really good, and I really enjoyed it. I feel like he really, he didn't create a masterpiece with Kenny and Company, because it's not perfect by any means, but it's definitely, like, to me, one of the best kind of slice of life movies I've ever seen, or most enjoyable.
Yeah, and I mean, technically speaking, man, like, the leap from Jim the World's Greatest to Kenny and Company, I mean, it's night and day. Like, Jim the World's Greatest felt like an independent production by someone who is very talented, and I know he did it after film school, but, like, let's just say didn't go to film school. Then this is by someone who did go to film school and learned, like, all the techniques and everything. Like, this feels like you watch it, and this is just a movie. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's no technical problems. Whereas Jim the World's Greatest, you're like, I get it. I totally get it. I get what it took to make that movie and everything. But this feels like a real production. And that's remarkable.
As Jack Horner says in, or is it his partner, Floyd Gondoli? No, not Floyd Gondoli. In Boogie Nights, what is Ricky, whatever his, anyways, his cameraman goes, "You made a real thing."
Yeah, whereas, yeah, Jim the World's Greatest feels like a student project. This feels like a legit, real movie. So, Zach, you know, our Coscarelli ratings, we're still doing the 1 to 10 like you did with the Carpenter Factor. And Jim the World's Greatest, I gave that a 5. You gave that a 6. I'm going to go first. And I don't... this was so fucking good. I'm giving this an 8.5. I mean, it's so fucking good. Like, I'm sort of on the, like, is this a 9? And I know we've got so many great things ahead of us. Like, I know I'm going to give John Dies at the end, like, a 10. You know what I mean? But, like, so, like, and is it the Coscarelli factor? I think so. Because as of right now, it's so kid-friendly and kid-oriented, but it's also honest, and it's also well-made. So, yeah, I'm going to give this an 8.5. I think this movie was absolutely spectacular.
I'll back you up on that. I'll give it an 8.5 as well.
Okay. Yeah, you gave Jim the World's Greatest a 6.
Yeah, I'm definitely giving it. I won't give this a movie a 9, but I'll be pretty close. I love this movie. I'll watch it. Like I said, I watch it all the time. I'll watch it over and over again. 8.5 on my scale is something that is like repeated viewing on a regular basis.
Yeah, and I want to give like some kind of room for growth. You know, like I said, I know we're, because I watch John Dies at the End so much, and I see it pretty regularly. So I know kind of where that's going to land. But you know, that's not to say I'm not going to go in with like an open mind and everything and see how it compares to things. But you know, I want to like leave a little bit of room for growth. But I mean, my God, on his second damn movie, he's just like, boom, right out of the gate.
Yeah, I mean, look, Jim Kenny and Company is one of my favorite Coscarelli movies out of his whole filmography. So, you know, he nailed it out of the park with this one. Yeah. He won't nail it out of the park with other movies coming up, but that's okay.
Yeah. Not all of them can be perfect. No. So we do have Phantasm next, which is awesome. Can't wait to get to that. Can't wait to get to The Beastmaster, because that was not a movie that I watched a lot as a kid, because I was not a big fantasy guy. Probably the fantasy movie I watched the most. Robert, you'll be happy about this, but when I was a kid, I watched the fuck out of Lady Hawk. That was probably my go-to fantasy film that I watched the hell out of. But I didn't really watch a lot of other fantasy films because I was never a big sword and sorcery kid. So I'm excited to watch The Beastmaster as an adult, you know, with perspective and you know, putting this whole, you know, tapestry together. It's actually one of the movies that I'm most excited to get to on here because people love that movie. And also low-key, I really want to see Survival Quest as well. But I'm excited. I mean, there's not a single thing on here that I'm not excited about. And it's funny because, you know, we had Elvis, we had Somebody's Watching Me, and a couple things in the latter half of things that I was never excited about. And to be honest with you, I was probably least excited about watching Jim the World's Greatest and Kenny and Company. And here I am watching Kenny and Company and just being like, I sent a GIF to Zach, the Seinfeld one, where when they're eating the frozen, you know, the low-fat frozen yogurt. Jerry's like, this is so fucking good. And I'm just like, that's how I felt when I was watching this movie. I was just like, holy fuck, this is so fucking good. Kind of reminded me kind of like a little bit of Dark Star. I was just like, oh, I was not expecting this to be so fucking good.
I knew you would feel that way about this movie. I knew you would. And I don't know how you'll feel about other movies in his filmography moving forward, but I definitely knew this one was one that you'll be like, I'm so glad I finally saw it because it's so good. Fortunately, a lot of the movies that are not available on physical media, I think you can find them on YouTube. I know Survival Quest is one. I think that's on YouTube. I own the, thank the gods, I still own the Anchor Bay edition of it. I tried finding it for Corey, but it's, you know, way too expensive to buy on eBay.
Yeah.
And I also feel like these movies, because like you said, Anchor Bay coming back, maybe they still own the rights to them, so maybe they'll put them back out. You know, he's just a guy who doesn't get appreciated like he should. That's why we're giving him the praise we are now. You know, little preview. I'm sure we'll talk about it on the wrap up after dark, but it got to meet Coscarelli recently.
Well, we did talk about it on last wrap up after dark. That was one of our big conversations. Yeah, Zach got to meet Don Coscarelli at Dark Delicacies, and
right.
That's where the joke the Coscarelli factory comes from, because we both got books signed, and Don Coscarelli, I wasn't there, but Zach got my book signed, and for some reason, even though Zach said the Coscarelli factor, Donnie C put a Y at the end of that and said factory. So now my signed copy says, Corey, enjoy the Coscarelli factory. So I'm debating, like, can I white out the Y? But at the same time, it creates an amusing little anecdote to discuss.
No, because who knows? We may end up having him on the show or interview him down the road, and we can bring that up to him and he'll be like, oh, okay, that makes more sense.
Exactly. But yeah, so Zach got to meet him. And, you know, if you didn't listen to that wrap up, go listen to it. It's actually the cover. It's the last one that would be right before this episode. And the cover image actually is Zach, you know, standing with him and, you know, getting a picture taken with him. But for people who have not listened to that wrap up, Zach, give us a little just, you know, high end. How was that experience?
Oh, it was wonderful. He's such a humble dude and he's such a down to earth filmmaker. You know, the signing was sold out. So it was like 2.5-3 hours, but we waited in line. Shout out to Bodie for sure, for weathering the storm and sitting in the line for 3 hours. I was like looking for every mobile game I could find on my phone to keep him busy, because that's a long time for a little kid to wait.
Yeah.
And just stand around and talk about stuff that he really doesn't know a whole lot about, you know? Yeah. But,
he's a trooper.
But yeah, the Hemi Cuda was there. Reggie Bannister and his wife Gigi were there. Bill Thornberry was there. They were all doing photo ops and autographs. Everything was kind of like a, you know, for sale. So you couldn't just go from one person to another and get a picture with them. You had to pay for it. But everybody was super nice. Bill Thornberry in particular, he would serenade the crowd by playing the big song from Sitting Here at Midnight from Phantasm, and he would play some of his other music as well. It was really, really cool. And he was so cool to the point that I made a connection with him and we're like, oh, would you mind coming on the show? So he will be a future guest on Podcasting After Dark. Look for that to come up very soon, actually. As of this taping, we are set to record with him a week from now.
Next week. Yeah. Next week.
Yeah. Next Thursday. Thursday or whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then of course, Don Coscarelli was there. And when I mentioned to him about the book or that our series, he was very taken aback and flattered. And I gave him compliments to Jim, the World's Greatest. And he was very much appreciative of that. You know, he's kind of retired and he's just kind of doing his own thing. It's like, he's just a guy you feel like you'd hang out at his house, you know? And he's your neighbor and you just talk to him about whatever. And, you know, he seems like that. He's not standoffish. I've met standoffish directors. I've met asshole directors. I've met nice directors. He's definitely one of the nice guys.
Well, and we also got, you know, we kind of don't really mention it, but, you know, he's like also beloved in Hollywood. I mean, J.J. Abrams loves Phantasm. Famously, the character, you know, Captain Phasma from Force Awakens, that is a play on Phantasm because her outfit is all that shiny metal like the ball. And right. The 4K restoration Blu-ray, which I think I sent you, Zach, of Phantasm, that was done at Bad Robot Studios. Like, I think J.J. Abrams, I'm sure there's more to it. I'm sure I'm not getting this right, but my understanding is he just let Don Coscarelli, like, use the facilities to remaster Phantasm because J.J. Abrams is such a huge fan of that. So yeah, Don Coscarelli seems like this guy that's just your average dude. But in Hollywood, I mean, he's got some clout. Like, people like his shit.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, too. He deserves it, for sure.
Yeah.
And will he deserve that for some of his other movies? We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out as we go along this this journey. But I'm loving it so far. So far, Kenny and Company was a surprise hit. Just like, and I mean, just over the you know, the out of the ballpark hit. I just was like, oh my God, I love this movie. Like 15 minutes into the movie, I love this movie. And I was just like, oh my God, this is great.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so glad that we, you know, with the second movie in, we're already, you know, doing nerd claps for it versus, you know, something in our previous factor that we weren't getting excited about. So
because John Carpenter, like we said, had somebody's watching me and fucking, you know, Elvis early on. But anyways, you guys all heard that. So Zach, $2 late fee, what's going on Patreon the end of this month? This will be dropping mid-month, so yeah, the end of it. Anything you want to tee up?
Yeah, well, so Corey's going to join us for Tales from the Video Store. Yeah. We have lots to talk about in that. Tales from the Video Store is such an awesome show that we've been doing for, gosh, the better part of 2 or 3 years now. And at one point, Dustin and I were mulling the idea of turning it into a book, just transcribing everything and turning it into a book, because the stories are so good. And we don't just talk about stories from working at a video store. We talk about what was happening in the video store during a particular time. For some odd reason, 1985 comes up a lot, but this year's movie for this month, this month's movie, 16 Candles, came out in 1984. So there will be some 1984-centric kind of pop-up questions, nostalgic moments that'll come up that I'll surprise Corey with on the episode. We've been talking about movies that come out on VHS during a particular year on the past episodes. So yeah, we're having a lot of fun on Tales from the Video Store. Corey's going to join us for that. One of the Night Boys, and then another Night Boy, Diallo, is going to join us for our monthly trivia at the end of the month, where we've been giving out prizes. Our last winner just received the Kino Lorber No Retreat, No Surrender Blu-ray. So yeah, so we do play for prizes. And sometimes they're koozies, sometimes they're movies, sometimes they're other things. So if you're not on board with $2 late fee, go to patreon.com/$2 late fee and join the fun.
Yeah, it's so funny how many people worked at video stores. Like, I think even Diallo worked at a video store, and I had no idea about that. It's like, okay. And then our friend Donna the Dead on Instagram, she worked at a video store. It's like, it was such an era, because now there's none anymore around. But back in the day, that was kind of like the thing, man. You either worked at a fast food restaurant as a teenager, you worked at a department store, you worked at a video store, you know? So
right. Right. And some of the stories are hilarious. Some are cringe inducing and some are terrifying, or all of the above.
I've experienced every single one of them. The only thing I've never experienced was a robbery. So fucking knock on wood. Thank God I never experienced that.
Were you ever part of a robbery?
Maybe. I definitely
no comment.
I definitely robbed Netflix of their Frailty DVD.
Well, yeah, that's a whole other story.
Oh man. All right, buddy. Well, this was awesome. I mean, seriously, like, words can't describe how much I fucking loved Kenny and Company. And it's awesome. I can't wait for it to come out on Blu-ray. Knock on wood, Anchor Bay puts it out, because it's just a goddamn shame. And that, like I said, that YouTube link, it's gorgeous. It looks beautiful. Just put us out on DVD, put out a Blu-ray, people, come on. So
just put the, yeah, come on, put it in a case so we can have a case, for hey, crying out loud.
That's all we want. All we want is a goddamn case. But as always,
I don't got nothing. We'll catch you on the dark side.
I thought you were gonna say we're gonna catch you in the Coscarelli factory.
Oh, we'll catch you on the Coscarelli factory. Oh wait, factor, damn it. Oh well.
Be sure to subscribe to Podcasting After Dark and give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Support Podcasting After Dark on Patreon. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Podcasting After Dark. And visit us next time for another installment of Podcasting After Dark with Corey Stevenson and Zach Schaefer.